You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history, DuckTales.
Woo. Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. The movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered your wigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
And welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am the host, the monster. Stop laughing, Gene.
Sorry.
We're back finally together after Dragon Con, after Irma. We have gotten together and we have an actual special guest. We have Tony, who is a dear friend of ours that we worked together at Borders many, many moons ago. And he is also the, how would you say it? You're the creator of CinemaViewfinder.com?
Yeah, I call myself the writer and editor-in-chief of CinemaViewfinder.com.
Okay.
He's the man at CinemaViewfinder.com.
I am CinemaViewfinder.
Without him, there is no source.
So, back in 2009, how long ago was that? Pretty damn long ago. Almost 10 years? I can't do math.
Yeah,
8?
That's terrible with that.
Eight years. We talked about the rebooted J.J. Abrams 2009 movie, which we all loved.
The Kelvin timeline.
Yeah. 8 years later, we're going to be talking about the latest incarnation of Star Trek, which we have a new Star Trek series called Star Trek Discovery. So, if you have not seen Star Trek Discovery, don't bother.
No!
This is going to be filled with lots of things that you don't want to know about until you watch the first 2 episodes, at least.
I've seen the first.
Online or TV, whatever combination. So there will be spoilers, so stop the podcast if you've not done so already. But we're going to start off with a basic conversation as to what our thoughts were about the Star Trek universe in general and what we thought about the trailers leading up to the premiere of this new series. So, Tony, you're being our guest. I'm going to leave it up to you. So, give us some of your thoughts.
Break the ice.
Okay. One of the things that, you know, that I've been thinking about since, you know, Star Trek ended, I guess, 12 years back with Enterprise.
Yeah, 2005, like, right.
On TV, you know, one of the things was that I really don't want the new incarnation of Star Trek to be the same as the Rick Berman style Star Trek, which was very cerebral, but not very action-packed, which, you know, like, the Abrams movies kind of picked up on that and did a good job of doing the action, but then they kind of became airheaded and left all the cerebral out, you know?
Right.
So I was really looking forward to something with a good balance because, I mean, I started watching with the original series and that was what I liked about the original series, that you had some really interesting stories, but you also had a lot of derring-do and romance and comedy and, you know? Mm-hmm. So that, that was what I was hoping we would see with this new Star Trek.
Okay. Jane, what are your thoughts from whatever the announcements, the trailers from Comic-Con?
I didn't know much about this. I was kept in the dark, and I kind of liked it that way. I was more concerned about the all-access aspect of it, because the idea, and we talked about this, the idea of, like, having to pay an additional, what, $6 every month? Mm-hmm. When you're already paying $10 for Netflix, X number for amount for Amazon Prime and Hulu, and to have this additional thing on, plus the oncoming of Disney, and with just basically one show that's new to me, that I really want to see, that I'm interested in, I was concerned about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work, but the thing is, it's the flagship kind of series for them. I think they have one other new show on All Access, and I was concerned about that. But I went in because it's Star Trek. I didn't anticipate watching it. I knew that the premiere was this past Sunday, and somehow I found my way to a TV set, and I actually sat there and watched the first episode, and I got angry with it because, like, here's 10 minutes of the show. Here's 120 seconds of commercials. Here's another 10 minutes of the show. Here's 140 seconds of commercials.
Well, that's because they knew they had you.
I know, but it started late in our time zone for some reason.
Yeah, because of the late football game. Tony, you still there?
You don't think it's a North Korean strike, do you?
Oh, please. I don't want to go to work tomorrow.
Hey, guys.
You got it?
Hey.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Yeah, I dropped like as soon as Gene started talking about CBS All Access.
It's okay. I drop out every time Gene talks too, so it's par for course.
But sometimes yeah, I see something important, like, look out, Monty!
But kind of give me a quick recap of what you guys talked about while I was gone.
Not much. I just basically, you know, All Access, a new thing, additional charges, not sure America's going to take it, but the idea that it's Star Trek, it still means something to me. I was surprised that it brought me to my TV. you know what I mean? I mean, like, this is historic. We haven't had anything like this since 2001, a new Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. It's not in the Kelvin timeline. And even though it was against my nature, I was kind of excited about it. You know, and then it started, and I was like, okay. It hooked me. It did.
Yeah. My impression, basically, right off the onset, was the trailer, where you have this odd-shaped-looking flying tortilla chip that was reminiscent...
It didn't even show up in the first episode!
I know, but it's reminiscent of Ralph McQuarrie.
Yes, that's his original design.
His design for... But it was for Star Trek Phase 2, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm like, alright, we're going retro-ish, that's fine. And then we get that ship departing some kind of meteorite or a crater, asteroid, and then you hear kind of like this kind of clanging music. It's kind of like dealing with Klingons.
Why are you doing it shot by shot? Okay.
Well, no, that's the first clue that I'm like, this is eerie enough to say what it is without saying it, what it is.
There are Klingon subtitles going on at the bottom of the screen. You
or
have
something.
To read.
So I'm like, why are they hidden in there? It sounds like Klingon music-ish. So, I am like, okay, I'm kind of there. I've watched, you know, all the Star Treks up to date, even the crappy Enterprise, all the way through to the last season. But
I haven't even finished.
Yeah, I know you haven't finished. But I know that it was the right time to get a new series because of what the movies had done to reinvigorate this whole franchise. But I was not expecting that whole CBS All Access avenue to happen at all. And we'll talk about this in a moment, but it's not the first time that TV or a network is using Star Trek to launch a new service or a new channel. So, Tony, you want to...
You're right. UPN did that.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good segue because I was thinking about that, and you'd have to go back even further than that because Phase 2 was conceived as a way of starting a fourth network back in 1977. Mm-hmm. Barry Diller was the one that was spearheading that with Michael Eisner. And eventually, you know, Eisner went to Disney and Barry Diller invented Fox. So Fox turned out to be his fourth network. But Michael Eisner was head of Paramount at the time, and Star Wars came through, and, you know, Phase 2 became the motion picture and whatnot.
Right.
But then Next Generation came around, and it was the same thing. Next Generation was used to lure everybody into watching Paramount's syndicated venture, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, as Gene said, Voyager was used to lure UPN. And, I mean, I get the business side of it, but I wish, in a way, that it wasn't always viewed as simply a way of attracting people to their new business venture.
Right.
And that it was viewed more the way Disney has been treating Star Wars lately, which is as this mega franchise, which can, you know, can unfold in a way that, you know, like they treat it like the family jewels, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is an important franchise that everyone's familiar with. It is a multi-million-dollar thing. Every time you make something of it, you know, it brings in the dollars. The thing that's interesting to me is, like, again, this time there's no toy license, there's no marketing license on this. It's just buy the show, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, because that's the thing that I don't like about the way they treat Star Wars versus Star Trek. Like, with Star Wars, you know, they treat it like the family jewels, in the sense that they're like, oh, we gotta really cultivate this. We gotta pour a lot of money into it, get the toy license and all that, and everybody will come, you know?
Oh. I think we lost Tony again.
Restart, reboot.
Reboot.
You like that show?
Yes, I did.
That's cute. Dodecahedron, what was the name?
Dodecahedron.
Dodecahedron. I can't believe they had action figures.
I know, I collected them. Oh. Hey, Tony.
Sorry.
Yeah. Where did you guys lose me?
End. They're coming in the end, I think you said.
Yeah, that basically, you know, Star Wars is being treated like we got to get the toys in line and everything else.
Right. Like, they cultivate it like it's a thing to be valued and that the people will naturally come to that. But with Star Trek, it's always like it's a balance sheet. And they're like, how can we squeeze the most money out of this without investing the least amount of money into it, you know? And that's what I don't like about how they treat this show in general, you know? I'm not referring to Discovery, but in terms of the whole franchise.
Right. Understandable.
Because let me just say this one thing and then I'll let you talk.
Please.
It was what happened with Star Trek The Motion Picture, which was where they threw all the money at it. It kind of failed, and then they said, oh, let's come back with Star Trek 2 and do it for a TV budget, you know? And, I mean, it worked out for them in that case, but I don't think that necessarily meant it had to become the template for their future doings forever, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's interesting that no one's ever done this stuff before. I mean, Inner Darkness, one of Monty's favorite films.
Bullshit film.
Yeah. I mean, they pulled Khan out, I think, a little too soon, but they did it because it was a love letter to the series. Apparently, the writers were like, we got to bring this back anyway. It's like Batman and the Joker. Captain Kirk versus Khan. You know, and you may have done that a little too soon, but it was okay.
But we wanted that.
But the thing is, the idea is that you have a new audience, a whole generation of people that never seen Star Trek before. They didn't care. You know, and they were okay with that. We as traditionalists.
And were you being facetious when you said that's Monty's favorite film?
Oh, yeah, very facetious. Monty hates that film.
Okay, I hate that film too. Yeah.
But
I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page.
I understand, yeah. Monty's just, I mean, it's entertainment. It's just trying to, I mean, yes, you can look at about the money-making things. You can look about the deals made behind the thing. But in the end, it's just entertainment. And fun. Do you get my eyes? Do you get me to watch it once? Do you get me to buy it twice? Do you get me to buy the all-access things? Am I going to buy the Blu-ray? If there's a toy line, do I care? You know, but in the end, it's all about entertainment. Do you get me at that moment?
Yeah, but remember, too, Paramount fucked us over with the release of these movies on DVD, and then they separated all the stuff that we wanted.
That.
The DVD commentary, separate, on iTunes. You know, deleted scenes, separate. You know, all the stuff that we wanted that's all in one DVD, that's the kind of shit that I really despise, is the fucking over of the fans who have supported this show, this franchise, for over 50 years.
But it's only fucking over the fans. The common viewer doesn't care.
Right.
But it's all about the Benjamins, man. Because then they turn around, and after you've gone out of your way to maybe invest in more of those things than you should, then they come out with the Star Trek Compendium Blu-ray that puts all those things back together.
The Ultimate Edition.
Right.
3 years down the line, the first time we released this.
Right.
It's the five-year anniversary, so we're going to do that.
So I'm not fucking buying it until that shit comes out, and then I'll buy it.
You'll be dead by then.
If you're lucky.
Okay, but let's put this aside for a second, and let's talk about it not from the standpoint of the business.
Did we like it?
It's just very frustrating. But let's also talk about it from the story side. Because one of the things that I don't like is that, you know, and you hear some people like Ronald Moore will say this, that Star Trek is meant for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Because the things that everybody likes about Star Trek are the really exciting stories, and that, you know, some episodes explore one character and not another, that you don't have these stars, it's more of an ensemble. And then when you get to the movies, they really can't do that kind of story. It has to be star-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be sort of a template, you know? And you know, it's been to the franchise's detriment that Khan was so successful, because from then on, every movie had to have Kirk fighting a supervillain of some kind, you know? And then Into Darkness had to be the second movie because we had to bring Khan back. Like, I would have been happy if Khan never came back, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, that's why I'm glad for a show like Discovery, because then it brings it back to TV and it opens it up to tell the kind of stories that we like, but maybe in this more exciting, you know, special effects driven age where you can do cinematic effects on TV for nothing.
Right, exactly.
I was very impressed with the way the show looked. It didn't look like it was on a soundstage, even though I knew it was. It looked very cinematic. You know, I was impressed with the details on the show. I thought the opening number was okay, you know, which you watch that stuff. But I don't know, the diversity of the cast, for me, it pulled me in. I didn't have a problem with it, because in the end, even though I know we're doing this podcast, I just want to have a good time. I was just happy to be back on the bridge of a Starfleet vessel with new adventures, with a new cast to get to know. And I think overall, the writing for that was okay. I mean, the Klingons were weird, and I was like, oh gosh. Whoa. You know, the only thing that makes them Klingons right now is their teeth.
Yeah.
And their inability to talk well, and we're subtitling everything they say, and they look completely different. They're kind of bling-ons, but whatever, they're wearing weird costumes. That's going to happen later. I'm not going to worry about that. But the writing for me, for the cast, again, the alienation, the strange aliens on the crew, the fact they've been together for 7 years, I didn't have a problem with it. I was excited. I was okay with it.
But you know, Monty, going back to what you said earlier about the Discovery being that Ralph McQuarrie retro design, if you go back to that same era, like, and you look at the designs for the Klingons that they were doing, these Klingons look like the Klingons designed back then. The ones that almost, like, the first draft of what ended up making it onto the motion picture.
No, I understand. And here's my argument with why I had this kind of knee-jerk reaction. You have the very flat-headed Klingons that we saw in the Star Trek series.
The original crew.
The original Klingons.
TOS.
Yeah. And then we get Star Trek The Motion Picture, and then we got the ridges on the forehead. And then it became part of this Star Trek lore as to, well, why are some Klingons with flatheads and some with ridges? Enterprise answers that question in a story arc with eugenics that kind of makes sense, and I'm actually, oh, I actually can buy this explanation. Moving on to what we see with the Klingons in Discovery, I'm trying to put in my head, oh, is this what the Klingons are supposed to look now? As opposed to, this is an offshoot of Klingons that we've never seen before, but then we get, and we're kind of going ahead of the story, but we're getting all 24 houses,
yeah,
and they all look like that. So now is that, we're just establishing now, that's what they are. This is what they look like. Deal with it.
And there was a white, they were all mostly African-American Klingons. Then there's a freak mutant white Klingon.
Yeah.
It was like,
So what is it that you're saying that you are okay with it?
You can explain what, like my initial problem was with the still shots. And I'm trying to justify in my head, well, if these Klingons are not like the ones we saw, like with Worf, or the flathead Klingons in the original series, what's different about these Klingons? Are they even Klingons? Could they be, like, you know, distant cousins? Or like the Romulans had the Remans that we've never seen before, and then they look like this weird Nosferatu creature. So I'm like, fine. That's what you want to go with? Fine, I'll go with that. My thing, aside from the Klingon thing, and I want to kind of bring it back to even before we get into the meat of the series, This takes place 10 years before the original series. And they said,
here it comes. Here it comes. I was waiting.
10 years.
Go ahead, take a shit on it. Go ahead, Monty.
Before
go.
Before the original series, okay? The Prime Universe. And he said, this is what that is.
Oh,
forget
God.
The Kelvin timeline. I've watched, prior to watching Discovery, that last season of Enterprise. They did a mirror universe they find the Defiant, which looks like the Enterprise of the old. So seeing that old crew on the Defiant, which looks like the Enterprise, I bought that. But the technology, the look, the ships, the uniforms, everything is completely fucking wrong with that look altogether. That's the biggest problem that I have, is trying to get my head that in 10 years, the original series is going to look like that shitty series, how it all started this franchise. I can't buy that. That's the big elephant in the room. I can't buy that.
Okay.
Dave, you want to go first?
Please let me go first.
Please let me go. Go, rip him. Teach him something.
Okay. Let's talk reality. The reality is that besides the three of us and maybe four other cats out there,
exactly,
nobody saw Enterprise. Okay,
I didn't see Enterprise.
So we can kind of ignore that. And the truth is that what we're trying to do is not necessarily fan service, but we want people to like Star Trek again so that Star Trek is cool and popular.
God bless.
And not so it dies on the vine, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so my theory is the way to make it cool and popular is to update it and, you know, and okay, so you got to sacrifice some of the aesthetics. You know, it's not that important because the heart of it is still the Star Trek that we like, you know?
It's good storytelling. And, it's about character development.
Yeah, and so, you know, the Klingons have to just be, you know, Klingon-y and alien-like and that kind of stuff. I don't need them to look exactly like Worf. I don't need them to look like Koloth did in The Trouble with Tribbles, you know? I just need them to feel like, whoa, I don't want to run into those guys, you know? And the same thing with the outfits. I mean, like, obviously, this may take place in the Prime timeline, but obviously, they're sticking to what they did with Kelvin, because they're like, okay, this new generation only knows the Kelvin movies,
So they're going to be confused if we try to make it look too different from that, you know? So I'm fine with all that, you know?
But why are the Klingons, why are all the Klingons wearing the fucking Jennifer Lawrence costumes from The Cell? I don't understand that. But no.
Jennifer Lopez.
But the Jennifer Lopez, I'm sorry. You know, the thing for me, I mean, you're right. David, I don't care what they look like. I don't care the costumes. You tell me they're Klingons, fine, they're Klingons.
Yeah.
I think but the apocryphal thing that I think the main reason that Monty, well, yes, they brought back Khan and there was a betrayal into darkness. That's the Kelvin timeline. I'm just going to discuss it for 2 minutes. All right. But I think that J.J. Abrams, although fine, being a fine director, writer, cinematographer kind of thing, I think he breaks the rules. He destroys continuity in anything that he does. I cannot believe that you can have a transporter that transports you from Earth to the Klingon homeworld or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I can't believe that you have super blood and a tribble, but you're just breaking these rules of an established sci-fi universe.
For the sake of convenience.
For the sake of story. Again, he did that with Star Wars and, you know, hyperdrive and, like, being able to fly. I mean, he doesn't care about the continuity, but he doesn't have to care about that. He's just trying to tell a good story. But I think that Monty gets hung up on the continuity of it because it all has to fit together for him.
And that's what they said they were planning to do. And right off the...
I mean, continuity is important, but I think that as long as it loosely feels right...
Right.
I'm more interested in getting people to see the thing that I've always loved. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I can share it with people. Yeah.
I agree. And so, you talk to someone new. Have you watched Star Trek? Well, no, but I like science fiction. Okay, what kind of science fiction do you like? Because there are different openings. There are different, you know, shows that you can introduce people to. But the whole concept of exploring and getting out there about different conflicts, where are you socially, you know, sociologically, just learn more about the world.
Okay. Here's two solutions for me and for all the other nerds like me.
There are only a handful of you.
That's more than enough. That's enough to get me off. Is that this should have never taken place 10 years before.
It doesn't matter.
No. It does. I'm saying...
I'll let you go.
It should have been after a Voyager. If we're doing this right, let's set it completely new. We have a clean slate, and let's just forget what has been done before. That's one option.
Okay. And I'll tell you why.
No prequel.
Hold on.
Okay?
Hold on.
We can come back to it.
Hold on.
Monty's waving at the screen, David. Tony, sorry.
I got the second option, and this is when just hearing you guys talk, is that they redo the original series.
No, they can't do that.
The
timeline.
No. They have to redo it leading into that series. Now, granted, here's a problem. One, if ratings are not doing well, we're not going to get another season of Discovery. We may get that new storyline of Khan, and this becomes an anthology. So then that rules it out altogether. But if they want to treat this like a full series, let that last episode, here's Kirk, here's the crew, and it's the Enterprise, but it's now this generation's Enterprise, yes, like they did in 2009, but you're going to have to then make it, from that point on, that universe. Not kind of retroconning it, but you are, in a sense, you're redoing that whole universe, but for the small screen. That's how I can buy it from this point on.
Okay. Tony, you got anything?
Yeah, let me...
Tuck him down.
Let me respond to those 2 points.
Go ahead.
And I'm going to start with the one you said last, which was, let's do Kirk all over again.
Yes.
Like, for that, think about Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. So Ronald Moore redid Battlestar Galactica, and it was quite different from the original Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
And it was way better, too.
Yes, okay? It was.
Okay, but... One of the beautiful things about Star Trek is the whole legacy aspect of it. And I am glad that even though they've changed all the aesthetics of the show, they still revere the original show and they still make room to say, hey, we're not erasing the original show. We're just
updating it, you know, and Kirk and Spock are still legends and they're not going anywhere. I mean, because even Abrams did that with the way he rebooted the franchise. He didn't completely obliterate the idea of Shatner and Nimoy. He basically just said,
I think Monty's having a seizure.
This is a new timeline. So I like that they keep that around, you know what I mean? And then going back to your first point, I think the primary reason that they did not set it in the future is because they felt constricted by that stupid Berman rule of, oh, the crew cannot have conflict. The crew cannot have conflict because they've evolved past that kind of petty shit. And to me, that was a stupid Roddenberry rule that Roddenberry started believing because he started believing all the smoke that was being blown up his ass like he was like the L. Ron Hubbard of science fiction.
Yeah.
And I think he forgot that what made Star Trek interesting was that McCoy and Spock would bicker and McCoy and Kirk would sometimes disagree on something. And so that's why I think they set it back there to free themselves from that and say, hey, this is earlier when they still disagreed and there was actual conflict on the show and it could be interesting.
Yeah, but they were, Spock is half alien. So you can say, well, that's the alien side talking. When you have DS9, the majority of the people there were surrounded by aliens. So the conflict was us dealing with the aliens, not necessarily with each other. So, yeah, you may have, what's his name? Saru?
Yeah.
The science officer?
Mm-hmm.
So, Burnham is going to have conflicts with Saru, so that's fine. You have to have someone that you can bitch to because they're not human. And that's, you're not really breaking that. I just think the problem lies is that I don't know. I'm just having major problems trying to get over certain issues.
That was
my least issue of the conflict within each other. My issue is all of a sudden Burnham is like the ward of Sarek and all of a sudden this is fucking Cybok from Star Trek V all over again.
No. The question becomes, okay, so you have Sarek in the episode. You've had a surrogate sister that we'd never discussed in the timeline. But you know what? Only true fans, and we're dying out now, you know, really care about that stuff. Only like, you know, back in the day, there was a time when it doesn't matter. Look, just can't you just relax, Monty, and just enjoy the show?
Time.
No, and look at what you just said. Like, we know that there was no brother until there was a need for a cyborg.
Right. Yes. And now there's a...
So now that set the precedent. Like, now we know, okay, Spock doesn't like talking about his family. You know, like...
Because he's racist.
He doesn't talk about Burnham.
He's a space racist alien.
Oh, my God. Look, I again, there was conversation about why did Leah's continue after Voyager with a colleague of mine. And, you know, it just... Because it's not interesting there. Because it is too much space to go. Then you create like, okay, the main bad guy is going to be the Kazon or just garbage shit. Oh, the bad guy is going to be the Ferengi. They're really dangerous. Like, that's not going to work.
No, and also going to what Gene just said about it's too much space. Like, think about how far in the future they are with Voyager, and then you want to go further into the future with that. And then they're digging themselves into the same hole that seems to be a problem now, which is that, like, we can't make technology look any better than it already does on the show. Then, you know, in 10 years, there'll be, like, iPhone 20, and it'll look more new than anything you saw on Voyager, you know? Like, so I kind of am glad that they've kept it closer in the park, like...
And let's not forget, like, the lesson we learned from DS9 after, like, season 2, they were like, we have to move. Having things just in the space station isn't enough. We need a ship. Here's the Defiant. Go out and find stuff.
Yeah, I really don't have a problem with those aspects of the show. And going back to what you said about a season 2 maybe being a story about Khan,
I think that there's something to that. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is my theory, and hear me out on this.
Like, of course.
I think that, well, one of the original pitches Brian Fuller made was that he wanted to pitch a Star Trek anthology series.
Right.
And if we view this the same way we view, like, American Horror Story, mm-hmm. which has different stories every season.
That would be interesting.
I have a feeling that Discovery might be a one and done.
Yeah.
And it might also explain, it might be built that way. And it might also explain why you don't hear about Burnham in continuity. Because whenever Kurtzman has been asked about that, he said, look, we respect canon. And trust us on this, there's a reason why you haven't heard about her. I have a feeling that just about everybody on this show is either going to die or get lost or whatever.
Or Q will come in and reset it like that.
May hit you.
But, slap you inside the face right now. That's why we haven't heard of her, you know? And I have a feeling that Nick Meyer is working on a con series because he keeps saying that he's working on the TV project, but he's obviously not working on this TV project, even though he's got his name on the credits.
Right.
I think that he is already prepping a season two that's going to be very different from this.
Right.
And so this might be like that anthology that we've always kind of wanted, you know?
Right.
But we don't know that we wanted. I mean, if that's the case, then CBS is holding all the cards. They have creative control. I don't know. I mean, again, I haven't seen episode two yet. But this all takes place in the Shenzhou.
Hey Monty, why don't we start by ruining it for Mr. Gene? Why don't you talk about the meat of the show like you said you were going?
Do it.
Let's start off from the very beginning. Okay.
Tell me a story.
No. Let's sit.
I'm going to have a drink.
Yeah.
Yes!
Let's start off with the opening scene. Not opening scene, but the opening music. The introduction to the music.
Yes.
The graphics.
Like Tangerine Dream from House? It was like that.
I listened to it many times, and it's very safe. It's not memorable. It's safe.
Did you like the way the captain and Michael Burnham walked in the shape of a Starfleet thing, and then the ship landed? They did a code blue, or what? Blue alert, David?
I don't know.
Tony, sorry.
I think that.
I mean, I was like, let's walk. I'm talking fortune cookies. You're like, really?
I believe that the opening of the show, both the pre-credit sequence and then the credits, were strictly designed to kind of scratch that nostalgia itch that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the fact that she walked in that Delta symbol thing, which was a little cheesy, you know?
Yeah, but and we came back to where we did. Walk in my footsteps, and yet not a circle. Then,
what are you, Jesus? Then, you carried me?
But we can't see this from space, but we can land here. I know. There's so many continuity errors. I get it. Not continuity,
the
just
credits. The credits were all like, hey, this is really Star Trek. Like, it was basically just a series of icons from Star Trek. You know, like the phaser, the communicator.
It would blow it up. The hand, the claw, the God and David thing, the Michelangelo thing, mm-hmm. but inverted, yes.
Yeah, and even the music was meant to resemble the music of the old series in a way.
Well, subliminally, so, yes, that's correct.
But honestly,
so I think that was all done with that in mind. But here's the cool part of it, though. Like, I like that the credits remind me of watching something like the credits to Game of Thrones. So, you know, like, it looks way better than any credit sequence they've ever done for any of the other shows. Right?
Yeah, but in Game of Thrones, the Astroglobe flies over and the map beneath it changes every season here and again.
Right.
Look, my thing is that it's compared to all the other themes for Next Gen, DS9, Voyager, and the original series, there's nothing that's outstanding by it. I thought DS9 was boring.
Now, what do you think?
No, because then I think halfway through, they kind of up they moved the tempo kind of faster.
Oh, yeah, and they changed Alexander Siddig's hit.
Right, to
yeah. Whatever it is, yeah.
Voyager, I think, was probably one of the better sounding score that if you hear that music, and visually, it's amazing.
Are we going to talk about Enterprise and their opening song?
It's been a long time.
Get from here to there. Yeah,
it's been a long time. So, yeah. Even that shit, as much as I hated that song, visually, I loved that opening montage. I thought that was compelling. But here, I just thought, except for a couple of shots, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, where you see this big eye and there's a little ship flying in between the planet and the eye. I thought, okay, it doesn't really do anything to really wow me over. It's interesting. It's visually... It's like watching... Oh, not watching. It's like reading the old Star Trek novels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see, you know, episode whatever, number 12. And then out of nowhere, they change the style, the look of the novels. And it's a little bit more up-to-date. And that's what it kind of feels like.
I would like to introduce a new topic into the discussion. This is called criticism or nitpicking.
No, we're talking about the very beginning.
Yeah, I know, but I would like to enter this into the log.
It's not.
Criticism or nitpicking?
It's my opinion.
I understand that, but continue.
Well, let me stick to the music a second, okay?
Of course.
One of the things that I hated about Rick Berman's era was the music, because for some reason he was really vehemently against any kind of melodic music. When... To me, one of the things that I loved about the original series was the music, and that somebody could hum one of the, you know, incidental music themes, and you'd know what episode it came from and what scene you associated it with. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like when right. when Kirk would fight somebody, you knew you were going to get that theme that da 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 da. You know what I'm saying?
Oh my gosh, David! Jeez.
I miss that stuff. And right. so then Berman comes along and he bans that, and all the music got really dull. And that's why Deep Space Nine's theme was the dullest, because instead of hiring somebody like Jerry Goldsmith to do the music, he hired whoever the dude was. I think it was Dennis McCarthy to do the music. It is. And so it sounded like just that sonic wallpaper that he did on all the shows, you know? Like, I like the Enterprise theme. You know, I don't care that it's a song or whatever, because at least it's a theme, you know?
Yeah.
I have a feeling, I agree with you about this theme. It's sort of bland, but I have a feeling it will grow on us. Now, what, aside from the credit music, though,
yeah,
I like the composer that they hired. He's the same composer who did the music for The Night Of on HBO, which is a fantastic miniseries if you guys haven't seen it. And the guy has, like, gravitas in the TV industry. When you're watching the episode, his music is really good. Like, it's not the kind of music we were just talking about in the Berman era. It's more, like, thematic, you know? And so, okay, the opening theme might not be the best. I agree with you there. But I like the music overall for the episode.
Okay. All right. Any other thoughts, Gene?
No, not really. I mean, I cannot talk about the soundtrack during the episode because it blended fine for me. You know, but David, it's interesting that you bring up the songs from the original series, because I can still hear those in my head. You're right. Yeah. Like, I can still hear the Kirk fighting scenes, the songs, because those are iconic. You know, but. No, I'm not gonna hum it. I can't.
It's so catchy. It's not named that.
But you know what I mean? I hear it. I hear it in my head, like, yes, I remember that episode. But I don't know. I mean, does that have to be a part of it? I mean, for Monty and I, we're soundtrack buffs. We like soundtracks. But the thing is, I mean, it's supposed to pull you back to those moments on the screen.
Right.
I don't know if that's happened yet with this show. I mean, again, you guys have seen two episodes, I've seen one. It's not a bad thing. I don't think the opening sequence is bad. It was well designed to haunt back to the original series. But I don't know. It's fine.
But you guys skipped over. We're talking about the opening, but you guys skipped over the actual opening, which was the Klingons. So yeah. What did you guys think about the Klingons?
The Blingons?
Well, it's not so much Blingons like in the Kelvin universe. But the stills that I saw before just reminded me of like Elephant Man-ish heads on this kind of Elizabethan collar outfit.
Elizabethan is correct, yes!
That it just looks weird, but like when I saw like the like next gen or like popular characters that are in that outfit, it looks fantastic, but when you put the Klingons in there, it just looks kind of awkward. I don't see that really being a functional garb outfit. I just see that as more like a ceremonial thing that they were doing for their dead.
But, yeah, oh, their hull is covered with the bones of their dead. There's decomposing thing. Like, that's interesting.
Reavers? Bunch of Reavers?
Oh, no, not bad.
From Firefly.
But I don't know. I mean, I really like to get in the meat of this conversation. Did you like the show? Gentlemen, I mean, again, for me, there were so many strange things that, fine, the story's going forward, but there's little Easter eggs, the way that, like, Michelle Yeoh's character has music playing in the background of her ready room.
You heard, you know, that? I didn't hear a thing.
I did. The way there's so many little iconic things. There's a bottle of booze on the wall, you know, just in case. But I like that.
Well, it's because she's doing the show, that's why.
No, I'm just saying. You know what I mean? I mean, there were so many little details of the show that I really enjoyed and respected. And it was, in my view, a leg up to the other shows, you know? Like, we've been here for 7 years. We know each other. It's fine.
I think you're right, because the show, I mean, even over the second episode, like, the show does not take place in that many locations when you think about it. They're on the ship, and they're in that binary star system, and that's it. But even then, and this was something I heard on another Star Trek podcast, like, even with that, The show is so dense with detail. Like,
yes.
Like, and I like that. I like that they don't feel obligated to take you all over the universe in the first episode, you know? Like, to me, that makes the story more internal and more about Burnham. What do you guys think of her?
I thought it was interesting that, like, okay, I get that the Klingon ship is now targeting us, what have you. We're not targeting them because you've recommended this. Burnham, I like the way that the captain, Michelle Yeoh's character, says, what should we do? And she says, I think we should target them. She looks at her and goes against her training, I think, and says, okay, do that. It's good, red alert. Do this. But then when they are doing that, it was weird to me that she goes, she crosses her for a minute, and like, to my ready room. I'm like, wow, you're going to your ready room now, doing a conflictive situation.
Well, Picard do that.
Yeah, but maybe there's a moment, and then you knock me out because you're a human that can do the Vulcan neck pinch. Ooh. Oh, that's fine. I'll let it go. I don't care. And then everyone's like, well, where's the captain? They're like, no, this fire at the ship. I'm like, well, that's a little strange. But I don't care about the minutia of it. I just want the story to move forward.
Oh, no, I know. And I think for me, the Vulcan hello, I had a problem with.
Because, the first episode.
Yeah. The Vulcan hello. Well, not so much the episode, but the greeting that she says, we have to fire on them. Just like the Vulcans now do.
Yeah. And that, we learned. They died the first time. We learned last time.
Right.
And I'm having Sarek come in. And I like the hologram thing. Did we like the hologram thing?
No.
That was different from the DS9 thing, was so primitive.
Well, I'm going to turn my seat around, and there he is.
Yeah, I was pissed off with that in a weird way, because, like, okay, I get that you're there, that's fine, but the fact that you sit down in the room that you're in is no.
You can't do that. And you're walking up steps.
Yeah, I can't. No. Yeah, that was weird.
Aside from that. So, going back to the Vulcan hello, I didn't buy the fact that, one, we haven't had Klingon sightings in over 100 years.
Yes, that's true.
But I'm like, oh yeah, Enterprise took place 100 years ago, before the original series. But, going back to Enterprise, they've had interactions. Archer never really had to fire. So, what had happened. Maybe they'll explain that. I don't know. But again, because I am such a nerd to details.
Yes, you are.
I had a problem right off the bat about we have to fire first.
Okay, but wait.
Okay. Yes, Tony, teach us.
Okay, well, wait. Here's my thing with that.
Okay.
The Vulcans on Enterprise, because as long as you're going to stick to continuity, were established as being more warlike and more willing to pull a move like the Vulcan hello. So I did not have a problem with that. Now, does that mean Starfleet would do it? No, I don't think Starfleet would do that.
No.
But I think the whole point of those first two episodes is that Captain Georgiou trusted Michael Burnham more than she really should have. Because I think that Michael Burnham, by the end of the second episode, is established to be a fuck-up.
Yeah.
And I think that at every turn, every time she gave advice to Captain Georgiou, it was the wrong advice.
Mm-hmm.
And that Georgiou's mistake was to listen to her.
Yeah.
Because I think by the end of the episode, Georgiou is like, man, I was wrong that I thought you were ready to be a captain. I don't think you're ready to be a captain at all. I think that she's right about that. I think what we learn by the second episode, which Mr. Jean has not seen yet.
I'm sorry. I won't pay for it yet.
That Michael Burnham is really screwed up. And part of it is her being raised by the Vulcans, because the Vulcans tried to iron out all the emotion from her. And when you think about it, in real life, when you raise a child that way, then what happens is that they don't learn how to deal with their emotions. And you see lots of instances where at really stressful moments, she has like an emotional freak out and does the wrong thing, like neck pinching her captain and committing mutiny, you know, and then that whole plan to go on board, you know, the sarcophagus ship at, you know, at the end of episode two was ill-conceived too, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that that was on purpose. I think that was deliberate to establish.
Right. She's not that
she's not.
But let me ask a question. Did you guys feel a moment of beauty the first episode when she's going over to the unscannable thing and it gets really cinematic? You know, they're all concerned about her launch. She's in the suit. You know, Doug Jones's character, who generally, you guys are slavers or you're dominated, but you were slavers. You were slaved before. Do you want to go with her? No, I don't. And she goes out there. That took like 20 minutes for her to go over there. And then she gets over there and she gets so high about the idea, like, wee, I'm over here. Look at me. This is new. It's different. Like, you got 10 minutes, bitch. You spent 10 minutes getting over here. You have to get back. Oh, no, there's a Klingon warrior here. I kill him because I don't like Klingons.
Well, by mistake.
Oh, by mistake. There's no Pepto-Bismol blood. But, you know, and then she passes out. The crew is very concerned because you've been with us for 7 years. We pick you up. You black out. Were there any thoughts on that? I mean, it's meant to move this plot forward, but also add character to Michael Burnham's character. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it also added that sense of wonder that you kind of want to get out of a Star Trek episode. Like, wow, look at that. You know?
I think that if I have to look at Burnham, I have to go in the mindset of, this is Ensign Ro from Next Generation. I have to look at her that way because Ensign Ro has issues.
I know, but you know who it is, really. It's who? Tom Paris.
Tom Paris would never be that much of a dick. As much as I hated Tom Paris, he would never be that disrespectful to his captain.
No, but when Janeway first recruits him, Tom Paris is that way.
I get what you're saying, but over the whole course of that series, Tom was in line, even though he was kind of like, will be the, can I speak freely guy, that person, he was, in the end of the day, he would never cross that line with the captain. Whereas Ensign Ro, she is kind of like, kind of disrespectful to Captain Picard in their first meeting.
I agree with Monty. I see it in that Tony, sense. I'm sorry. Ensign Ro did fuck things up, and Michael Burnham knocks out her own captain, although I don't know if humans can do that, can they?
Well, Data did, and he's not human.
Yeah, right.
Picard did.
Picard did?
Picard knocked someone out with the mirror pitch?
Do you guys remember in the episode Starship Mine where the...
Yes.
That was basically Die Hard on the... he Vulcan neck pinched somebody in that.
Oh, jeez.
I have to look at that again.
That's also got Tim Russ
and
in that.
Yeah.
It was post mind meld with Sarek, so I think that's how he learned that.
Okay. That would make sense.
Tony, God bless you and your continuity knowledge. Sincerely, sir. Wow, that feeds me. Thank you.
All right, so...
This is why I say he's Tom Paris. She's Tom Paris, though. Like, so, Brian Fuller wrote for Voyager.
Right.
And that was where he was a staffer on. I think he had heard this story, which I don't know if you guys had heard, but I read it in that awesome book by Mark Altman and Ed Gross. Have you guys read that book, The 50 Years?
I started to, but the problem line that I had with the book was that if it's a documentary and you see people talking and they change people, so-and-so said this, cut to so-and-so said that, and you see them visually, the book is just like that, but you don't... It's hard to imagine what they look like or what they're talking about, because it's like, in this instance, you get three or four people talking about different points, while the author is just kind of like not really there. You know what I mean?
It's right.
Like, so it was kind of like off-putting, because I love that kind of crap, to know the behind-the-scenes, to know what people are doing or not doing, or get
the
information.
That's the kind of style that you're seeing a lot now in magazine articles.
Yeah.
The oral history
right.
style. But one of the stories they say is that one of the early conceptions of Voyager was much like this show, which was... That originally they had planned on having Tom Paris be the central character of the show. And that the show was going to be seen through his eyes so that you would get more of a Lower Decks kind of feel for the Voyager crew.
Right.
And that it was only later when they decided, no, let's make this a female captain, that then they became gung-ho about, you know, really getting a good actress to lead the show and whatnot. But... That's why I was making the comparison to Tom Paris earlier, because I think that, yes, you're totally right. The Tom Paris that we've seen on the show would never do this. But something put Tom Paris in prison. And I'm almost certain that we're going to see the same kind of arc with Burnham, where Burnham is imprisoned, and then after that, she becomes a better officer than
right.
what we've seen so far. But, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that these first two episodes are almost like not even like the pilot for the show. They're like the prologue.
Mm.
And that next week's episode is the real pilot, because next week is when we finally meet the Discovery and the crew of the Discovery,
right.
which we didn't meet in episode two, Gene. They never get near the Discovery.
Although the trailers look like there were.
That's my question, though. I mean, I don't care if you spoil the first two episodes, because... You know, I got a feeling watching this show that this is just the slow burn of a very
yeah.
long fuse. But
yeah,
I would like
I
to know, go ahead and spoil it for me. I don't care. I want to know what's going on. But my question basically is it worth it? I mean, did this give you enough, I don't know, red herrings, enough bait to take? Because that's what the question is all about. I mean, Star Trek doesn't come around every year. You know, this took what, over 10 years to get back to us, and in a stream of like some major company is actually going to do this, and the only way we can support it is by subscribing to it, and yet the subscription to that is, it's a little heinous, a little offensive to me, and yet I can do it. But my question to you guys, gentlemen, as more professionals in your knowledge of Star Trek, is it worth it, gentlemen? I would like to know your feedback on that, please.
You can take it, Tony.
I gotta say that I'm not happy with the subscription part of it. And
no one's happy
reason,
with that.
Yeah, but the reason being, I was sort of with it at first. because I was like, okay, I don't need another subscription service, but maybe I'll get some other things that are cool about it. But hey, I don't watch any show on CBS.
Neither do I.
Okay. And B,
Young Sheldon, Big Bang Theory. Who cares?
The one thing that was attracting me to it was, oh, okay, but they'll have all the classic shows from CBS that I may have watched, like Mission Impossible, Lucy, whatever. Well, guess what? They have those shows on there, and they don't have the complete run of those shows either. They have only like certain episodes. So I'm like, so then what's the point if you can't even binge on a show that you like, you know?
Yeah, but these are formative days. In their defense, these, you know, it's not perfect yet. It's not going to be perfect for a while.
But it's been around for a year.
They have to learn. I know, but not for them.
And then here's the other thing that pissed me off about the first night, which was, okay, I'm paying $6 for this show. They said it's going to start at 8:30, and then because of a football delay,
yeah, 8:48.
It started at 8:48. I'm like, fuck that football debate. Like, that's on network TV. Like, I'm like, okay, that's on network TV. The football delay can affect the TV premiere, fine. But I'm paying $6 for this show to start at 8:30. It damn well better start at 8:30. You know what I mean? Like, I was totally incensed about that. So they got to get their act together with the whole streaming part of it.
Right.
Now, is it worth it as a show? Like, I mean, I am fine. I'm glad that they finally updated this show so that it looks like the other shows that we watch on TV. Like, I could put this show, I mean, I don't know if the writing is going to live up to it or whatever, but I can put this show next to an HBO show and say, this is at least as interesting looking as an HBO show, which no matter what you want to say about Enterprise, you cannot do that with Enterprise, you know?
No, you can't. Or Next Gen, or...
I mean, and I love Deep Space Nine. So, I mean, that's where Star Trek left me, because I wasn't a big fan of Voyager. But Deep Space Nine I love, but that, it's still like a 30-year-old show, you know what I mean? Like, this looks like a really modern, hip show, and I like that they're going to explore gay relationships, which it's about time, you know what I mean? Like, those kind of things are what I like about this show, that they're moving it forward, because Star Trek should be the cutting edge. It should not be stuck in the 60s or in the 80s, you know?
You're right.
Well, I think the problem lies is that it's hard to do it's hard to do a timeless show set in the future, but honestly, I think that's what's endearing about watching the original series the way it is. And even though they have updated the effects, which I think is perfect, with all the exterior shots, and they updated that stuff, I love
that. That's the first compliment you've given to that show. You know that.
What are you talking about?
That's the first compliment you've given
to the show. No, I'm talking about the original series.
Oh, fuck. Okay, go ahead.
My question, and this is something that I think goes to a larger problem with the whole digital access. Disney's doing it because they're going to take all their shit and
Netflix. 2 or 3 years, yes, I know.
Okay. DC will have a digital platform. So all the DC properties, if that goes away from the CW, which hopefully doesn't do that, I don't want to have to piecemeal all my entertainment over so many different venues. I love Hulu, and Gene and I are sharing our subscription to do the live TV because of what we can have more access to.
That's expensive.
You just said that on a live recording, man. You can't say that.
What?
Well, you get two, three medias. You're fine. You can do that.
You're promoting piracy, dude.
No. But he has his account. I have my account. So when I'm not there, we have two options for TV.
Well, there you go. We're not doing anything weird.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is that we're sharing that account so that whenever he watches, that's fine. And we've been catching up on Game of Thrones, Rick and Morty, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a lot more to offer as opposed to, okay, now I'm going to have to add another $6 to CBS All Access. Well, if I have to add another $9 for Disney, you know, shit's going to start to add up. So you're going to have to start thinking smart about, well, if this is what they're going to do, I will wait till all the episodes are done. then kick in my free subscription for 1 week, binge it all, and then end my subscription. So you're not going to get the fans who support this show forego for more money for a series that they have to pay to watch, will not be able to own it, and then when it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray, you're going to have to fork it over again. That's the problem that I have with this. I mean,
you're going to get people that don't even fork it over for that 1 week, and they wait for it to come out on Blu-ray and just buy it all.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. I mean, I watched Enterprise, Star Trek Discovery. I liked it. I was surprised. I liked it enough to look into it. And there are a few different programs, but like $5.99 per month with commercial interruptions. More than that, $5 more for that for limited commercial interruptions, but you're still getting interrupted. And then other options, but I'm like, no, I don't want the commercials. But it pissed me off. You just take me for a ride. I get that CBS is not making money. I get that your normal network is not surviving well on normal, you know.
It's a business decision that makes sense right, in this day and age.
Right, overall, it's fine. But the thing is, you're still trying to break ground on this. Right. I get that Star Trek, although a good candidate for the idea of breaking through the ice, it may or may not lead you to fortune. I honestly think it's going to fail. And that's sad.
You know what's going to happen, though? You know what's going to happen? I mean, TV's behind the times.
Yeah, right. I know.
What's going to happen is, what happened in the world of music, that there's going to be all these this splintering into all these little niche things, like right. the DC, mm-hmm. the Disney, the Marvel, whatever the fuck, you know. But what's going to end up happening is that eventually some of those are going to fail, and then you're going to see the ones that fail start coalescing again into
right.
one.
Exactly.
And so eventually, 5 years from now, you won't have to worry about 20 different streaming platforms. There'll probably be 5 or 4.
Right.
You know?
And that's like, the market. So, that's the way the market works.
Right. Yeah. But my question, sir, is this. We get Star Trek Discovery once. And I don't know how serious the financing is on this, but I'm pretty sure they're watching the numbers pretty close. And I get that there was a spike after the first episode premiered last Sunday on this. But, you know, if the results don't come in, we're not going to do this again. So my question to you, sir, Tony, is it worth it? Should we support this? Or will it come again? Because I'm not sure. It's been like almost 10 years, plus 10 years, before we had our last Star Trek show. And we love the franchise.
I don't think we need to worry about that, because the reports are that CBS has already made all its money on this. When they sold the rights
to Netflix.
To Netflix for the world.
Mm-hmm.
And why is it showing in Netflix in every other country for free? Well, you pay for your Netflix things, but not here in America.
Because it's purely, like you said, this is purely an experiment for CBS to see if the fan base can be attracted to this platform. I mean, they did the same thing. CBS Viacom also owns Showtime. And Showtime did the same thing with Twin Peaks. Mm-hmm. They premiered it on their platform. They wanted to see if they could sign everybody up, you know, to watch that show. And that's what they wanted to see with this. If they can sign up people to watch it for Star Trek, then maybe what they'll do is they'll start developing more culty type shows for their platform, you know?
Yeah. Just like Netflix.
I don't think that whether you support it or not will affect the future of Star Trek, if that's what you're getting at. I don't think that it will.
Well, it's a question, because, I mean, we don't get this all the time. You know, again, I didn't want to watch the show. I mean, I knew of it, but because of the all-access kind of perception of that, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work or not, because it's such a big experiment. But in the end, first episode's free, watch on your TV, fine, get, you know, a lot of commercials, but watch it live, and I did, and I was compelled by it.
And I think...
I mean, aside from them making all their money back, apparently CBS had the most sign-ups for the streaming platform on that day.
I heard that, yeah.
that they've ever had. So it's already a success from that metric.
But you have to take into consideration is the fact that, yes, people signed up and they're getting that free trial. And I bet you in 5 days, like me, I will be ending that subscription, and then you'll see the drop-off.
If you remember to sign off. Most Americans will not. Most Americans will not.
That's the other thing. So I know that I will, but...
you're going to sign off?
No, I already did. I watched the second episode. I watched the second episode that night, because I wanted to see how well... Because the trailer looked like, Jason Isaac is going to be in it, and he wasn't. So I was kind of disappointed about that.
But I guess what I'm asking is, so you guys are not going to continue to watch the series on CBS? You're going to wait till whenever it
another
comes
option.
Out?
And I think that will dictate CBS to change its mind. If that happens, CBS will change its mind about what they're doing to Star Trek. And I think it's fine if they already have a season. And you want to watch the past season, you have to pay to watch it. But like you do for the old new shows, like for Colbert, you can watch the first, the most recent episodes for free. The back catalog, you have to pay for. And I think there's a balance there. So if we get another season of Star Trek Discovery, then it makes sense to charge people to watch the first season. And let that second season be free.
It's a faulty experiment anyway, because I'm gonna watch the whole season, right?
Right.
So what does that matter? The minute the season's over, I'm gonna cancel my subscription. So what did they get out of it? Nothing. You know what
No,
I mean?
they get $5.95 depending on what program you get for the next 3 or 4 months.
Right, because
they get that, but the key for them is not to get me for 4 months. The key to get me to stick to CBS.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, because that's what's going to make the money. Like, Netflix has me forever. Hulu has me forever. You know? Like, so, yeah, I mean, with Twin Peaks, I mean, what a crazy show to try that out with, because they had the built-in fan base, but they did not expect the show to come out the way David Lynch did, which was defiantly anti-television.
Right.
So, even the fans who tuned in for the first couple episodes were like, man, we don't like this show. We like the old one better. And there was a huge drop-off. You know? So, I'm not sure this experiment will work in any event, you know?
That's the thing, though. It's an experiment. I mean, for me, I understand what you're doing, CBS. I get it. And I understand this is the only way you're going to make money. I understand that, you know, you're doing good programming, but we now need to pay for it. But you are the pioneer doing this. You know, you've got, I think, a spinoff on the Good Wife show on there.
Right, which is a new show.
But that's fine. So Star Trek Discovery is not the first thing. But I like Star Trek Discovery. The question is, Gene, are you going to be responsible and pay for it? Because honestly, my first instinct is, you know what? There's so much other quality programming out there. I can wait 16 weeks to go online, then pay for $5.99 with commercial interruptions and binge it that time, and then cancel.
Right. Like with Game of Thrones.
Right. You know, I'm okay with that. But the thing that's interesting to me, though, Tony, is that I want to buy this show. It's good enough. I mean, the first episode I saw it, I went, you know what? This is compelling. It's a universe I care about. I want to see what's going on here. I'm interested in the characters. There's a dynamic crew. There's new storylines in a universe I'm familiar with. And I want to support the franchise of Star Trek.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, if they're trying to go after the HBO model, they're forgetting one thing. That HBO started off by having a bunch of awesome movies right after they came out in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And they have sometimes like 4 to 6 shows that you want to watch all the time. You know what I mean? So when you buy into HBO, like, you're not just getting the one show, you're getting a whole shitload of entertainment options. You know? And that's the problem with this, that it's not dense enough yet to justify anybody sticking to that, you right. know? But anyway, we could talk about this part forever.
No, I know.
Let's talk about the show. Like, so what else did you guys think of the show?
Well, let me ask this question to you, because this is kind of something I answered in the Orville, which I know you hate and do not plan to watch because it's Evan Farley. But the question is, when you're watching a new show, when do you say, at what point, yeah, I'll watch this and continue watching it, or I'm like, no, I didn't get it after the first episode and just forget it? Where is that breaking point for you?
I'm very forgiving with TV shows because I always remember as a kid that there were many TV shows that sucked for a while before they got good, mm. you know? And so with a show, I'll usually give it 4 or 5 episodes. I mean, hell, I'm still watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I'm with you. So, I mean, like, I'm very forgiving about stuff like that.
Oh, I agree.
What's your point in connection to this show?
Because the thing is, you know, in retrospect to this first 2 episodes, right?
Spoil it for me. Come on.
No, Gene. What the point here is that when I looked at the Orville, and I'm not giving anything away because I already did the podcast on this. First episode, I saw everything in the trailer for that series, so there was nothing new. Second episode, okay, nothing great. But really the third episode is like, oh, this is interesting. I'm now going to be watching this series rather than you give up and then maybe you'll watch it in the future. If it's around for another season, maybe you'll invest the time later on in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
to me, again, watching Star Trek, DS9 for the first couple of seasons were one of the toughest storylines to get through.
That was a slog.
Right. So getting through that first couple of seasons, and then when we get Commander Sisko, now become Captain Sisko, he shaves his head, he gets the goatee, we get the Define, all of these great things came on and made DS9 a really good show later on.
You know, that wasn't the episode for me. The episode for me was the Jem'Hadar.
Okay.
Because I remember that up until then, the show had been sort of lame, and then when the Jem'Hadar crashed into that ship that looked just like the Galaxy-class Enterprise,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, okay, they're trying something different here. They're getting a little looser here. I think I'm going to like this show, you know? Like,
right.
And then soon after that, they got into the whole Dominion thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know that feeling that you're talking about.
So
where you feel like the show turns.
Right. And usually, again, Star Trek fans will just stick through it and hope for the best. But I wasn't exactly blown away by it. I mean, my family and I were watching this. My daughter thought it was okay. My wife thought it was fine. But I have to continue watching, much like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., hoping for that one moment that I'm like, oh, that was fantastic. And you wait for that day to happen. And sometimes you may not even get it. So, and I want to believe in the fact that because we have Star Trek, we have such an interest in this series, because there's so much other stuff that's out there, and like you said, Gene, we couldn't give two craps about this if this was any other show. But because this is Star Trek, it matters to us.
It's part of our childhood.
Right, so we have to support this.
Growing up process.
But you're really making it hard to support this show. Behind a wall.
Is it that hard, though?
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I mean, when I look at the launches of all the Star Trek series,
mm-hmm.
after the original, of course, mm-hmm. like, I think that this one has hit the ground running a little bit faster than the other ones. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That, well, like, they have to. Yeah.
Like, the first, like, Next Generation took a long time, even longer than Deep Space Nine, to get where it was like must-see TV, you know?
Yeah, third season, like, I would say.
I would say third season, yeah. I think up until then, we were just so happy to have Star Trek back. We were like, we'll watch anything with a star and a delta sign, you know, like, but then, and you know, and then Voyager, man, Voyager started off good and then it crapped out so quick because for me, the Voyager drop off was the fact that here was a show that was promising conflict between the Maquis
right.
and the crewmen. And within three episodes, the Maquis are like everybody else and, or, where's the conflict?
The only conflict is B'Elanna calling Anton Kim Starfleet. I'm like, that's it? That's it?
That was so lame. I mean, like, Battlestar Galactica did that so much better.
Yeah.
Like, and then Enterprise. I just thought Enterprise was misguided until it got to the Zindi arc. You know, like, to me, the Zindi arc really lit it up.
Season 4!
No, Season 4 was fan service.
Season 4 was fan service. I mean, I like aspects of Season 4.
Yeah.
But, like, I really, you know, going back to what you were saying about the explanation of the Klingons and the Flathead, I really could have lived without the explanation of the Klingons and the Flathead.
Well,
like, to me, I would rather pretend that the Klingons just always looked the way they looked and that these guys just couldn't afford it. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, or, like Worf said, we don't talk about that.
Right, exactly.
Which
right.
is funny.
That's so much funnier.
That's a Klingon. What the hell happened to you guys?
That is such a creative solution to it, you know.
But I give it to Enterprise. It's a much better explanation, other than what the Force is made of, which is the fucking midichlorians. That ruins the Force with that explanation. At least the Klingons, you can buy it.
Yeah.
You really want to cross over now? Really?
Yeah, but. Going back to this episode, I thought the space battle was interesting, but it was so damn cluttered that I couldn't tell one ship from another. I couldn't tell where Burnham was versus everyone else. And please let me be wrong on this, but didn't seem like our side, Starfleet, suddenly just left, and like Shenzhou was still
run, dude.
And right, and Shenzhou is left behind, and I'm like, but you still have people there, and you just up and was it my imagination?
No, it wasn't. But you know what, man? This is 10 years before Kirk, so it's Wild West out there.
Oh my God.
Cowboy diplomacy, really? You're declaring cowboy diplomacy?
Yeah, those guys are like, fuck that shit, we're leaving, we're getting killed.
That's
in
episode two, right?
That's episode two.
Yeah. I'm like, what?
So that was my thing. I was like, but you would stick around and at least get the people off, you know, into your ship and then take off. But they were like, fuck you guys, you broke.
No, man, this is not Picard Starfleet, okay? This is not Picard Starfleet. This is the Starfleet with all those crazy captains that Kirk would always end up fighting.
Which would explain that the signage not being complete, if something you want to look into. The comm badge, there's a gap running down one side. So to me, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, that the symbol is not complete, but there's something else going on with it, like you're missing something.
That's really deep, man.
Monty was massaging his nipple throughout that.
I loved it.
That's a very symbolic way of looking at it.
Well, considering you just confirming what the whole other the ships leaving and fuck all y'all, that makes perfect sense now.
I'm seeing it.
That's what I thought. I thought it was just like Wild West. Like, these guys have not become the Starfleet that we're used to. This is still the Wild West Starfleet.
Yeah.
They
haven't written the
playbook. I like those sort of touches on the show where they keep reminding us, like, this is not fully formed yet. That's why Burnham is committing mutiny. Like, you know, I like that kind of stuff, you know?
Mm. So, I mean, like I said, I'm a Star Trek fan. We're all Star Trek fans. Mm. One way or another, I'll be watching this series. Whether it's going to be the next episode or 6 months down the road, seeing the next episode, I'll watch the series. But it's going to be an interesting story for the next couple of months as how well this experiment is going to proceed, and if it will succeed for CBS, good for them. They didn't have anything to lose because, again, they made their money up front with Netflix, and they're getting this great experiment underway. And let's see how that fares.
You know, the format of how they plan on showing it is they're going to do 8 episodes. Right. Then they're going to take like a winter break, and then they're going to come back in January and do another 7 episodes.
Yeah.
But you already filmed everything according to IMDb.
Huh?
But you already filmed everything according to IMDb.
I know, but that's the way they're doing it. But I suspect what's going to happen is when they get to episode 8, right before that break, they're going to realize, man, we've had a huge drop off here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's open the trial
back up again.
Yeah, let's open the trial back up for everybody. And then people like you can say, hey, it's Thanksgiving. Let's catch up on every episode we've missed.
Right.
And then drop it again, and we'll catch up on all the other ones after after they've shown. You know?
Right, so we'll see. I would love to revisit this down the road, maybe 6 months from now, to see what we thought about the experiment, what we thought about the whole entire season, and talk about it further then. So, Tony?
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm surprised we didn't talk about the show that much. We talked about all the other stuff around the show, but not the show.
Ha! I have not been spoiled yet!
I think... Well, you are free to talk about the show. Gene is free to talk about the show. I think, to me, it's...
I've seen the show.
No, well, from what the first episode. I think, to me, the bigger issue, the more distracting issue to watch and enjoy Star Trek is because of this whole fucking CBS paywall.
You're too principal.
That's my issue. And along with other things that I have a problem with in general with the episode, this was a very big thing that it's hard not to address it. But in fairness, there were some great moments, a couple of great shots that I thought it was amazing and looked fantastic, and it's nothing that we've seen before on a small screen, so I give them some benefit of the doubt that, you know, it's a great looking show. But again, you already heard my issues about what I think is wrong with the continuity or the look, but putting all that aside, I want to look at it in entirety and revisit this again 6 months down the road with you and Gene, and talk about this and see, you know, did it all pan out? Was this successful to be done this way? To have a long arc story focusing on this one fallen character, so to speak. So
You know what I was surprised didn't happen was, because I had been highly anticipating this to happen, was I thought they were going to be like, oh, let's do the Game of Thrones version of Star Trek. Like, let's have sex and foul language.
They were all being, I think they were leading towards that. More adult, but there's nothing there, not at least the first 2 episodes.
Yeah, not so far.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see how they do that when they bring the gay characters on board, because, I mean, I don't think that they're going to go over the top with it, but I don't want them to be like, vanilla either, you know what I mean? Like, I want it to be like a realistic depiction of that.
Right.
But yeah, that sort of surprised me, I gotta say. I thought it'd be more, you know, Burnham banging some guy before she went to the bridge or something, yeah.
Alright, so what else, any other points you want to bring up besides that lack of adult aspects to a show?
No, I think that I'm, you know, as positively as I'm speaking about it, I'm still reserving judgment on the show.
Okay.
But you think that they got episodes off
right
to a good start, you know?
Right. So, and as like you said, it's only 2 episodes in. So,
yeah.
Like I said, we need to watch the entire series We're going to watch
it. I won't see that for the next, I don't think.
We'll see it whenever.
13 weeks.
We'll see it whenever.
Week 16, I will give you my $5.99 and then binge watch.
So we'll go from
there. Man, you guys better not read my Facebook posts.
And that's the other thing, too. It's like, yeah, I really, and Jay and I talked about this, is being in those moments that when it happens, you were there and you get excited. But it's really hard to do this now with this show because, you know, you want to support it, but damn, this is not the way I want to support the show.
You know? I know, it's very different to see Tasha Yar die than to see it 6 months after you know Tasha Yar died.
Right.
later you're like, oh shit, that's it? You know?
It's like, when did Tasha Yar become Selah? Oh, wait.
We have to get our people. Ah, you're flying. Okay.
So, yeah. So, any final words, Gene?
Tony, good to hear from you. Hope you're doing
good
well.
Good to hear from you.
A pleasure, sir.
So, we're... Yep. Being...
That was it.
No, I was...
We just acknowledged it. That was it.
You guys, I was...
There's a pause.
Okay.
So,
again...
I'm glad to hear.
Yeah. So, Tony, thank you for being a guest again on our show. And, like I said... We're going to do this again in about 6 months or whenever we'll get to watch.
And hopefully the tech will work better and we'll see you on Skype and everything will be better than this.
Or we'll do this in person in Atlanta.
That would be awesome.
That actually would be...
We can go to Atlanta and do this.
Yes, we can do this in person.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Weekend. We can do that.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.